Good evening and welcome to the Week in Review. I'm Amanda Vinicky. Parashutz has the evening off. We'll be joined by our Week in Review guests in just a moment. But first, some of today's top stories. A 25-year-old man, Alex Perez, is being charged with first-degree murder for allegedly stabbing 36-year-old Jeremy Walker on Tuesday night in an incident near the Mag Mile.
We hope that this provides some small measure of comfort to the family who lost someone so senselessly, so tragically, a father whose son must continue to soldier on without him because of random and senseless acts of violence.
Police Superintendent David Brown says it was a senseless act of violence, a traffic argument that turned deadly. Perez is set to be in bond court tomorrow. Fifth Ward Alderwoman Leslie Hairston says she'll finish her term and stay engaged with her community, but she will not run for re-election next year. Hairston has been on the Chicago City Council since 1999, nearly a quarter of a century. The Fifth Ward includes all or parts of Hyde Park, Jackson Park, and South Shore. Planned Parenthood of Illinois anticipated a surge of out-of-state patients upon the overturning of Roe, and that is coming to fruition. Planned Parenthood operates 17 health centers in Illinois. The South Suburban location in Flossmoor has seen its out-of-state patient load triple since the Dobbs decision. Congresswoman Robin Kelly toured the facility today.
We need to ensure that we are able to support those patients and provide care for them while still taking care of the women and girls here at home. We need to work to expand telehealth services nationally and ensure access to the abortion pill. We must keep offering family planning services.
Planned Parenthood says the majority of the out-of-state residents coming to the Flossmoor Health Center are from Indiana. Indiana's new law that bans abortions with rare exceptions takes effect September 15th. The Big Ten football season's kicking off tomorrow in Ireland. Northwestern will play Nebraska at an away game in Dublin. It's the Wildcats' first international matchup and the first game of the Aer Lingus College football series. And just so we're clear, we're talking American-style football, not soccer. Another big game this weekend, closer to home, the Chicago Sky are hoping to become repeat WNBA champs. And here they are, beating the New York Liberty in the first round of the postseason. The next step in the semifinals comes Sunday night when the Sky hosts the Connecticut Suns at Wintrust Arena. And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Laura Washington of the Chicago Tribune and ABC 7 Chicago, Greg Pratt of the Chicago Tribune, Lynn Sweet of the Chicago Sun-Times, and Sarah Schulte of ABC 7 Chicago. Thanks so much to each of you. Now, first tonight, let's begin with a check-in on the race for governor with both Governor J.B. Pritzker and the Republican nominee, State Senator Darren Bailey, hitting the campaign trail this week. As our own Parashutz reported last night, Bailey has campaigned closely with two Rockford-area pastors who were at the Capitol during the riots on January 6th. Bailey appeared on stage during a service with Pastor Brian Phillips at his church Sunday. Here's what he told worshipers at the Grove Fellowship in Poplar Grove.
We're at war, but we've got everything we need to win, and it's up to what we say, what we do, where we go, how we interact.
Above the pulpit was a graphic on screen featuring a line from the Old Testament of the Bible saying, "The Lord is a man of war," that was next to a symbol of the Punisher, a popular Marvel Comics character that's been appropriated by far-right militia groups like the Proud Boys. Laura, let's begin with you. What do you make of Bailey's connections with these individuals who, we should point out, have been accused of no criminal wrongdoing in connection with the January 6th riots?
Well, Amanda, it's unfortunate for his campaign, but since he was nominated, it seems like every week there's been another controversy that's put him in a difficult spot and has made him appear to be perhaps not as legitimate or someone who might raise concerns among voters, particularly voters who are not super conservative. And this is another example. And every week when he's having to fight off allegations about some of the controversial things he said and done, controversial associates with his campaign, every week that he's doing it as a week, he can't talk about his agenda and his programs. Now, he says that he has said that he has not associated with the January 6th events. He says anybody who was involved with that and who did anything illegal, and I think he issued a statement to that effect this week. Anybody who's been done anything and been involved with that has been done anything illegal should be prosecuted. But he does have these unfortunate associations.
Lynn, weigh in there. What does this mean for his campaign? These are people he's campaigned with. Is it surprising that he's aligned with them and they with him?
It's not surprising because Darren Bailey has thrown in with the wing of the Republican Party that is also the wing of election deniers and conspiracy theorists. He sought and got Trump's endorsement. He is close to freshman Representative Mary Miller, who is the Trumpiest member of the delegation, who is an election denier, and one of the people that voted not to confirm, voted against the one of the election deniers in Congress who voted against it. Now, the point is he needs to expand his base if he wants to even have a chance of winning. In short, that's what this is about. He could whip up the base closer to election day by making a visit to a place like that. And by the way, where's his campaign? It doesn't vet, you know, where he's at. He's just given this, you know, it's like a gimme for Pritzker. So this shows he doesn't have a campaign that's ready for prime time because he can't avoid getting into jams like this, and he doesn't have to. So self-inflicted wound, unforced error.
Sarah, let's go to you on that. During that when he made those remarks at the church, he went on to say that we have everything we need to win. But does he? We're looking at, I believe, some $60 million in Pritzker's campaign account to a $500,000 in Bailey's.
Right. I mean, he obviously needs a whole lot more money to compete against Pritzker. I mean, to Lynn's point, he's not going to lose any votes from his base by aligning himself with these type of people, the January 6th people. But in order for him to win and beat Pritzker, he needs, you know, Collar County suburban voters, some of those middle of the road voters that, you know, can go either way. And he's not doing himself any favors and certainly not going to do himself any favors with fundraising. With those kind of voters.
Does he disavow the base at all by denouncing what happened on January 6th? Sarah?
Well, he's already, I'm sorry, he has already said he doesn't support, you know, lawbreakers or illegal activity on January 6th. So, I mean, I think that's as far as he's going to go.
That's as far as he's going to go.
There's a reason that Governor Pritzker and the Democrats spent the millions of dollars that they spent to support Bailey and the primary, and you're seeing it right here, and we're probably going to see it every week or every other week with things like this for a while. It's probably a pretty shrewd bet by the governor, or at least it's looking like it right now.
And now, speaking of money in campaigns, Dick Uihlein has not given any money to Bailey since the primary, but he has given, just last month alone, $15 million to a PAC that is run by Dan Proft. Now, that one, Greg, aired a commercial recently that's more anti-Pritzker than it is pro-Bailey. And Mayor Lori Lightfoot has had a problem with it. Explain her umbrage.
Well, the mayor said that they darkened her skin to make her scary to suburban people. And she said it was a racist ad. And she's been flogging Bailey, which she enjoys fighting with Bailey, too. And it's another one of these unforced errors by the people trying to take down Governor Pritzker, whether it's Bailey or this PAC. And it's just a big embarrassment.
Now, Laura Washington, do you believe that this ad was doctored? And you have Prof calling that insertion insane. And he said that is typical of what he described as inveterate race hustlers like Lightfoot and Pritzker.
Well, if all you have to do is show the video side by side, the video that they used that Proft and the PAC that Proft represents used in the campaign ad next to the video that you would take off the internet, and the one that they use is definitely darker. I mean, it's the proof is in the pudding, and this is an age old trick that's been used not only in political campaigns but in many other venues, harking back to even before the days of O.J. Simpson when he was on trial. And Time Magazine ran a intentionally darkened photo of him to make him look more criminal when he was on trial for murder. So this is nothing new, and Lori Lightfoot has a right to be concerned and a right to speak out against it. But, you know, like Rick said, she likes to spend a lot of time attacking the Darren Baileys or the Donald Trumps or the people in the Republican Party, you know, and maybe sometimes when that reinforces the the image that people have of her as someone who's always on the attack, who's always bitterly complaining about the way she's been treated. I think it was unfair, Ed. I think it was inappropriate, but you got to pick your fights. And maybe that was one she need to take on right now.
Laura, just sticking with you for a moment, because we do have State Representative LaShawn Ford, who, by the way, is Black, saying that it's wrong to say that being darker skinned should be perceived as more dangerous. What do you make of that?
It's wrong to see it, to believe that, but people do believe that. That's why they ran that ad. There's a negative connotation with dark skin. Even African-Americans among ourselves sometimes look down upon people who are darker than us. And this is because of all the imagery that has been used against us for decades to paint this picture of darker people being more ominous, being more dangerous. And it's just a fact of life that people believe that.
Now, the ad just didn't have, you know, it wasn't just Lori Lightfoot. The ad also had a lot of images of African Americans, you know, in crime scenes as well. So, I mean, that all played into it, too.
Thanks, Sarah, for spelling that out. Now, Lynn, I want to go to you before we get into the mayor's race, because Illinois is going to play a central role in these midterm elections as the U.S. House is up for grabs. We're about a month out, actually, only from the start of early voting. Give us a quick lay of the land as it relates to Illinois.
Well, in the cities, the big race, of course, is the governor. You have a competitive congressional races, mainly outside of the Chicago area. And you don't really have the only really big competition question may be in the state house and state senate is if the Democrats can increase their numbers and bolster the supermajority. But here is the race to watch. The races, it's the two Supreme Court races, because even though we talk about Illinois as solid blue, because we have a Democratic governor and state house and state general assembly, the Supreme Court is Democratic only by a 4-3 margin. Two state Supreme Court seats are up. They both may be competitive. Watch for a lot of money to go to that. The other thing I would watch for now is how organized labor is already on TV and dumping a lot of money into one of their referendum questions that will be near the top of the ballot, giving more safeguards and making it easier for unions to ensure that they could organize.
So constitutional amendment, Supreme Court seats, and then some swing districts for both the state legislative races and for Congress. Now, the race for Chicago's mayor is a bit more out, but the field is already taking shape, with Chicago Teachers Union President Stacey Davis Gates saying she is out of the competition for mayor.
Why aren't you running for mayor?
Well, because I like my job. Look, Chicago knows what it needs. It needs a partner. It needs an organizer. It needs someone who's in love with humanity. We don't have that right now.
Greg, that's not to say that CTU is going to stay out of this, right?
Definitely not. You know, the CTU has been preparing Brandon Johnson for higher office, and it looks like this is going to be the time. You know, he did the Sun Times podcast with Fran Spielman this week. He was talking about his interest. He's been calling around to all sorts of union people and elected officials saying he's thinking about doing it. And the CTU was always going to be a player in this race. You know, the mayor has been talking about that since 2019, that they're trying to bloody her up, and they are going to support someone. Right now, it looks like it will end up being Brandon Johnson, and it's going to be an interesting race.
Waiting for that official announcement to drop. Currently a player and contender, however, is Willie Wilson, who tomorrow is going to be giving another grocery giveaway. Laura, you say voters should be somewhat wary of this tactic. Why?
Well, I wrote about this week. I call it the Willie Willization of politics. It's becoming a bigger and bigger trend for politicians to execute giveaways. And now in this case, Willie Wilson is indeed giving away his own money. He's giving away free gas, free cash, groceries as a way to help people get through these very challenging economic times. He's been doing this for a long time, but there are a lot of other elected officials who use taxpayers' money to provide benefits to taxpayers, and they seem to always want to do it very close to election time. Some critics would say that this is an attempt to curry favor with the voters, to buy votes from the voters. And I think in some cases it works. I've heard a lot of commentary from people on the street and people quoted in stories about what Willie Wilson is doing and saying, he's doing something for me. Even if it's only a $25 gas card, I'm going to think about voting for him, or I'm seriously going to vote for him. So sometimes people do it because it works.
Certainly. Go ahead, Lynn.
Quickly jump in. He's not running these giveaways as if it's in really connection with a real campaign. People should be there. You know, he doesn't have the big kind of staff to make this giving away this money worthwhile. He doesn't know if he's giving money away from anyone who's from Chicago, if they're registered. He's not collecting, as far as I know, maybe you guys know, is he collecting data? Is he getting...
Lynn, everybody knows he's running for mayor. This is his third time running for mayor. He's not running. He's not giving away the money in connection with his campaign as he's doing it with his foundation. But everybody knows he's a mayoral candidate. They know he's a politician.
But in order to actually make sure that they get to the poll and that they vote and that they follow up on it,
sure,
Great, get out the vote stuff, you still need to know who you're giving this money to.
Well, that's
interested in you.
The catch-22 there, where if he starts to do that, he's going to break the law. You know, the reason that he's able to do it without breaking the law is he's done it before, and they're very explicit about saying it's not a campaign event. So if you start taking that data, you're going to get yourself into trouble. What he's really buying is name ID and goodwill, but it's a very fine line that they're walking here.
He could just
send the money to his campaign war chest, it's his money, and do the same thing, and then maybe even leverage it more.
Meanwhile, Wilson is also taking umbrage with the city election board's plan to reduce the number of precincts. He's saying that this is voter suppression. Is that legit?
I think that, you know, what the Chicago Board of Elections says, and the short thing is that they're cutting in-person voting locations with the new map. And what they say is that they're expanding vote by mail and things like that. And so it's kind of a wash. But, you know, there are a lot of older people that, you know, are going to be inconvenienced. And they are, you know, the older people are the people that vote the most. And then you have the problem of we insist on having our Chicago elections in February when it's freezing out. So you're just so we have this horrific turnout, and it's going to be a bad turnout again probably. And nobody wants to go farther if it's snowing. Correct.
You know, it's not new. I mean, 10 years ago, they also slashed a bunch of precincts. I mean, it's not the first time they've ever done this. Like, I don't know how many they slashed the last time around, but it was quite a number as well.
And one of the reasons is because more and more people are early voting. They're voting by mail. They're not showing up at the polling places. And I think another issue that the board is facing is staffing. Every organization and company and institution in the country is having a problem finding workers. And I think they had a big problem in the June elections because a lot of the folks that they hope were going to be there to show up at the polls to work weren't there. So they're trying to make sure that they have the coverage that they need to operate properly.
Yeah, I mean, it's saving money. Plus, we've lost population, too. So
that's true.
We may be losing some monuments and statues. At least that's the recommendation of a commission that was formed by the mayor. And yet Lightfoot is not ready to follow through with committing to taking down the Columbus statue. Greg, why is another working group needed?
Well, it's needed because the city and the mayor want to punt on the issue. You know, it's easy to add. It's hard to subtract. And in this case, you know, for the city and the commission to say, let's build monuments to Latinos and to Black people and to the race riot of 1919, is easy, you know, to say, let's take down these and there's going to be constituencies is hard. And, you know, the city probably regretted entering the exercise as soon as they got into it in 2020, which is why they took 2 years and they're going to punt as far as possible.
Punt till after the election, perhaps. We'll see. She might not be able to hold out that long. Now, Sarah, we know that voters care about their safety, and the city did this week receive some national recognition for its efforts to reduce crime, but then also start of school, and there was a bit of an ominous beginning for the Schurz High School. Sarah, to you, what do you make of where things are at when it comes to crime and just in general, CPS, start of the school year?
Well, I mean, in terms of crime, I mean, obviously the mayor has been trying to change the narrative. I mean, the entire, you know, Darren Bailey's entire election is about Chicago crime and how it's Lightfoot and Pritzker's fault. So any chance she gets, she's going to try to get out there and try to spread some positive news about crime in the city. It's a pretty hard one to go up against because on a daily basis, all of us, television, newspapers, the headlines are about whatever the latest crime is. This year, she talked about some good news about crime and keeps talking about how homicides and shootings are down by 18% and that we're really not reporting all the positive data. But it's hard to do that when it's overshadowed by something like three, four students shot outside of a Chicago public school the first week of school. It's a hard one to go against.
Let's move to D.C. as we've got about 5 minutes left in the program. Now, Lynn, we have the affidavit in which the FBI made its case for needing to go to Mar-a-Lago and retrieve some documents, public, granted, with some heavy redactions. What did we learn from that affidavit?
Well, we know, by the way, it's very unusual to make this kind of document public before any criminal charges are made. We know that there are 184 documents found in this stash that have some level of degree of being confidential or secret. And we learned that this has been going on since May 2020. But here's what we don't learn. We have no idea why President Trump wanted to keep this. We know that the stuff that the FBI recovered included some papers, newspaper clippings, but that is a big mystery that has not been filled in yet, is what he was going to do with this stuff, irregardless of whether or not anyone believes or it could be proven his claim that things were automatically declassified because he had some kind of standing order to declassify things. A standing order, by the way, that it's FBI notes in the affidavit, the part that wasn't redacted, there's no proof that it exists.
So lots of standing questions there and potential national security implications, Lynn, but also in Washington, big news for those who have student loans and a divided reaction to President Biden's plan to relieve students from some of that debt. This is, we saw a lot of folks coming to the Chicago area. What do you make of that? Is this program going to help Democrats come the midterms?
Well, it will deliver to a degree on Democratic promises. If you're a student and you thought you're going to get all your education for free, it never was going to happen. It's kind of like wake up. If you have a Pell Grant right now and you have a low income, you may qualify for up to a $20,000 break. Here's what's important looking ahead. The Biden government doesn't want people to get in the jam if they. So many people are now where this crushing student debt follows you until you're middle-aged. And they're going to figure out ways to spread out payments. They cut in half the amount of your discretionary income at issue so you could cut your repayments. Mm-hmm. And that, it seems to me, is something that's real big and doesn't deal as much with this one-time break for people that, yes, some critics are howling at as a government subsidized giveaway to which the Biden administration is forcibly pushing back, noting how many people, including Republican critics, got these loans that turned into free money during the beginning of the COVID pandemic.
Now, Greg, when we talk about money and government, city council members are due to get a raise of nearly 10%, at least unless they say otherwise. Why are they set to get so much?
Well, it's a preposterous system that we have where they get automatic raises and then they can vote not to get them. And there's a formula and some people get a certain amount and it's based off of how much we're already earning. They should have one pay scale, same as any other elected village or whatever. You know, it's just a really weird, goofy system. And then you have these people playing games. And in this case, some of them are going to enrich themselves in a way that's going to get them in trouble with the taxpayer.
Sarah, do you think that we're going to see some members of the city council reject that with an election on the horizon or put that money in their pockets?
Well, you're right. There is an election on the horizon, and that's a tough one. A 10% raise is a pretty big one. I would take a 1% raise.
Sure.
That's going to be a tough pill to swallow. I mean, you know, maybe all these aldermen shouldn't quit if they know they're going to be getting a 10% raise.
No one gets 10% raises nowadays, I think, but it depends. on how it could be effectively used as a campaign issue in some of these automatic contests. That's what remains to be seen, whether it's a potent issue that someone could use to defeat an incumbent alder person.
As it is right now, I mean, obviously the election isn't until February, even though I think petition gathering starts, what, next week? But right now, the number one issue is crime. That can change. But so, you know, something, who knows where aldermen's salaries are going to, you know, stack up by then.
Who knows? But I will say that each of you are well worth it. And thanks for spending your evening here with us. We are out of time. So our thanks to Laura Washington, Greg Pratt, Lynn Sweet, and Sarah Schulte. That is our show for this Friday night. Don't forget, you can get Chicago Tonight and The Week in Review streamed on Facebook, YouTube, and our website. That's WTTW.com/news. And be sure to join us tomorrow night at 6 for Chicago Tonight Latino Voices. Then immediately after that, Chicago Tonight Black Voices at 6:30. Then we're back at 7 o'clock next week. Now for The Week in Review, I'm Amanda Vinicky. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm, and proud sponsor of programming that offers advice and strategies to enhance the physical and mental well-being of fellow legal practitioners in Illinois.